It's Slim and Lou, the podcast crew, recommending comics just for you. I like Swamp Thing.
We did it. We got a number one hit in our hands.
Call me Beyonce.
So did you just come up with that on the fly, Lou, or was that something you spent a few days on?
Well, I have a very long commute on the subway.
Yeah, long commute.
Yeah.
This is the Comixology podcast. Lou has graciously been hard at work on a new intro song, and it was amazing.
I like Swamp Thing.
Is that supposed to be like a Scotty Young version of me holding a Swamp Thing?
Oh my God, yes, that is exactly what it is.
Let's ask Scott if he wants to draw us a new piece of art for the show.
Scotty, call us.
Scotty, I know you're listening. Call us. You have my number. I don't know if you do, but just call a number. So we have a big show.
Huge.
Big show. This is where we talk about the books that we read. We try to pitch them to you, dear friend of the show. You were big on Twitter this week. You talked about a shipping that has now become canon.
Oh my God, I'm so excited. But I don't know if I should say any more about it, because if people haven't, it just came out, the issue just came out. So for people who don't know, we work in comics and we see the comics a little bit before they come out to the general public. And with great power comes great responsibility, because you get to read them early, and so you find out that your ship is canon.
Oh my gosh.
But then you have to suffer in silence till everybody else reads it.
Maybe we shouldn't talk about it then.
Yeah.
Maybe we should talk about it when it comes out.
Well, it came out today.
Oh.
But I don't want to give details, because
Is it an Image book?
It is.
Okay. Very mischievous agreement.
It's my Wictive ship.
Okay.
I'm so happy.
All right. Maybe you read it this week. Maybe we'll talk about it when the time comes, you know?
Yes. There are a lot of things happening on Twitter. You know what? Something good happened on Twitter.
Tell me about it.
I would like to talk about, because nothing good ever happens on Twitter, but this time it did.
Okay.
So there was some controversy about this variant cover with Riri Williams, right? The J. Scott Campbell one. And people were saying that it just wasn't really befitting the character, and it ended up getting pulled. And a lot of people were really concerned about censorship because, you know.
Yeah.
So today I saw that he had posted what he was calling rethink, and it was a new it wasn't he wasn't commissioned to draw another one. He just decided to.
And who was Riri?
Oh, sorry. So Riri is I think they're calling her Ironheart, and she's a 15-year-old girl who is apparently pretty smart, because she built an Iron Man suit. Mm. And she's taking over.
She's getting her own, I think, her own Iron Man book.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, pretty cool.
So in any case, J. Scott Campbell listened to the critique that the pose and the outfit were maybe a little bit not in keeping with the character. And he drew a new image and he put it out there, and it was so good.
It was amazing.
Yeah. And I'm really pleased that people who were critiquing the first image were speaking up even louder to say, this is great. Thank you for trying again. It's even better. It was a little frustrating that there were also some people saying, oh, well, now they're going to complain about the ankle showing or something.
Yeah, I saw this.
You know, it's like, which just proves that those people don't listen.
Hmm.
You know, they are not listening to the actual words that someone says when they're offering critique. They just get mad that a critique is happening and they shut down. And I'm so, so happy that J. Scott Campbell is not one of those people, you know, and that shows real integrity as an artist to go back and try and do something with this, you know, with the critique and the other ideas that people put in his mind.
And he said it wasn't an official variant, but hopefully something happens and Marvel decides, this is a great cover, maybe. Yeah. Let's turn this into a variant.
Let's do it.
Marvel, call me.
Just scream,
you don't
Matt.
Have my number, but call
just
me.
Scream Matt. I think they're down the street.
Get a three-way call with Scotty and Marvel and we'll make something happen. Let's go to the new releases, shall we?
We shall.
Batman, you ever heard of him?
Didn't we talk to someone once who knows about Batman?
I think we did. Maybe some guy, Scott Snyder.
I've heard of him.
He's kind of a legend.
Sort of a big deal.
There is a new Batman issue out, new Avengers title, brand new, number one. There's a new Walking Dead, Catwoman, Mayday, new number one issue. You read that, really?
It's sexy.
Oh, my word. Animosity, number three. Giant Days, very popular book. Little book called The Wicked and the Divine. I don't know, maybe Lou read that. Who knows?
My ship. My precious
I
ship.
I love Wicked.
That'll be your Scotty Young character. New Thor title, The Unworthy Thor.
Which Matt Wilson is coloring.
And Olivier Coipel is drawing, so Thor's abs look amazing. Death of X, number three.
Oh, I read that.
Oh, really? Faith, number five, with Hill Dog on the cover. Hugh Dog. Let's see. What else we got? I think that's a good start. Well, yeah. One other thing I want to mention, too, is the Comixology Unlimited library has been getting refreshed because every month we like add new books. We take a few away. So the one big one, at least in my opinion, was Madman got added, the first volume of Madman. And in the lore of Comixology, John Roberts, co-founder, it's one of his, I think it might be his favorite book and character from Mike Allred. And what else did we add? Rumble from Image, 1-4, and Battle Chasers. Talk about an older book. But that's just a few. There was like, you know, ton of books that got added, so check it out.
Sophie Campbell's Wet Moon, Volume 3.
Yes,
added,
there was a nice interview up, I think, on the Mary Sue about that.
There was, and we put it on our social media, so you should definitely check that out.
Check our social medias. Well, I can't even say it. So what did you read this week, Lou?
So, on Twitter, I was chatting with a listener, Keith B. Hi, Keith. Hmm. And I asked, you know, hey, is there anything you want us to chat about? And he recommended to me Motor Girl Number 1 by Terry Moore. And I'm so glad he did because I needed like half a reason to read this book. I really liked Rachel Rising, which is a book that recently, I think this year, right, concluded.
I believe so.
It was like 40-something issues. And I really liked Motor Girl. It's about a woman named Samantha who lives in the middle of nowhere in the desert in Nevada. And she works at a junkyard and like fixes cars, and she's really into cars. Her best friend is this talking gorilla named Mike.
Love
like
it.
Inexplicably talk. He's just a talking gorilla. It never explains why. It gave me some Tank Girl vibes, you know, so I just went with it. And a UFO crashes in her junkyard, and she like repairs their flying saucer for really? Them. And they're really appreciative of that. And from what I've read of the solicits moving forward, this is going to become like a business for her, right? Like UFOs are going to like come visit her and get her to fix their stuff.
Makes sense.
And so there's this old lady who owns the junkyard, and she keeps getting offers from this mysterious company to buy it. And it's insinuated in this first issue that they know about the UFO situation.
Whoa.
So, but it was so charming. Like, I really like Terry Moore's art. It's black and white. You know, there are little touches that make you feel like he's really giving a lot of thought to, like, who his character is visually. She wears a crop top because it's the desert. And there's a scene where she's like bending over, and she's not like, you know, she's a thin person, but she, you know, when she leans over, like he actually draws like belly rolls on her, which, you know, that happens to human beings. And it's just, it indicates to me that he really sees this character as a person and not just as like a pinup, you know? And I just, stuff like that really, to me, pulls me into the story. And, it just lets me feel like I can let my guard down as a reader and trust that I'm going to be able to just enjoy the story. So wow. I'm really glad I read it.
Interesting. You know what I just thought of? I wasn't planning on talking about. Do you remember when we're hanging out with Kieran Gillen in San Diego?
Which time?
And he talked about how one of his favorite writers, and I think Hope Nicholson said this as well, but his favorite writers was Peter Milligan.
Oh, yeah.
And he mentioned this book called Enigma, which I'd never heard. And like during the interview, I was like, Peter Milligan, I'd never heard. I didn't realize that creators and readers held him up in such high regard as like Neil Gaiman and whomever. So I actually read Enigma for another podcast that I do with my friends. And it was fantastic, actually. It's like 1983 Vertigo. So it's around the kind of era where, you know, interesting books are being made right alongside of like, you know, the retro books. Oh, wait, did I say 83? I think I meant 93.
I think you meant 90.
Yeah, 93. So like right around X-Men number one by Jim Lee, like this other kind of book. So it's the gist of the book is this dude, he's seeing characters from his favorite comic book when he grew up. There was only three issues of it ever made, but come to life. And it's freaking him out. So like no one really bought this comic book back then, but he's starting to see the villains of the comic book come to life and the hero, the Enigma himself, show up. And it's like blowing his mind. So he tracks down the writer of the comic book to see, like, how is this happening? What does it mean? Am I connected in some way? And they try to find out how this is happening, but it also has to do with, like, his sexual awakening in a way that I wasn't expecting. It was amazing. Yeah. It was really good. It felt like a very Vertigo title, and I mean that in, like, obviously the nicest way.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a great compliment.
Mm-hmm. But the real book I read this week was Avengers number one. You ever heard of these Avengers?
Once or twice.
Mark Waid and Mike Del Mundo are doing this brand new Avengers title with Captain America, Thor, the Wasp, and Herc are the members of this
great
team.
Great lineup.
Yeah, and Spider-Man, actually. And Mike Del Mundo, I can't pinpoint a monthly book that he's ever done, but he's done a lot of covers. Most notably, I think the covers I remember when he did Wolverine covers a couple years ago.
Right, yeah.
They were gorgeous. So he's doing a monthly book here. I mean, I don't know how many issues he's going to do, but the gist is Peter Parker tries, like, they've lost the Avengers Mansion, and Peter Parker is now like a millionaire in the Marvel Universe. So he like tries to tell the Avengers, like, you can have the top five floors of my building because my bodyguard, Spider-Man, says that it's a good idea. And just his interactions with the Avengers team, like out of costume as Peter Parker, is so hilarious, and the facial expressions are so good. So he parlays that into a team membership. And the gist of the story is Kang, who's a time traveler villain in the Avengers universe, meets up with Vision, and he's asking Vision for this infant child that he's hiding from him. And not only is Kang there, but a younger version of Kang is also there. So there's two of them.
I love time travel.
They're so good. And so you find out that Vision has been like keeping the secret for a few years in order to stop Kang from doing more bad things. And it's a beautiful book. It's well written. It's funny. So go check it out. I love it.
On the topic of artists who you don't normally associate with interiors, The Wicked and the Divine.
Every time you mention Wicked on the show, an angel gets its wings.
I know. Look, it's my favorite book, okay? I'm sorry. If you don't believe me, go read it.
Yeah,
go okay. Read it. So this one though is pretty special because Kevin Wada, who's amazing, he doesn't really do interiors. Mm-hmm. And actually, like 2 years ago at Emerald City Comic Con, I was buying a print from him, and I was like, please, 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 can you work out some way to do interiors for Wicked? It would be so amazing. And like, I'm not saying that I arranged this.
You're taking full credit is what it sounds like. So,
but now we have this beautiful. So the conceit is that it is a Pantheon magazine that is edited by one Kieran Gillen. Hmm. And he sent all of his staff writers out on assignment to interview the gods because the Morrigan for the first time is offering to be interviewed and to allow herself to be photographed. So it's an interview with the Morrigan, and there's one with Baal and Woden and Amaterasu and the timeline. And so they do. I was worried that this wouldn't push the story forward because we just concluded an arc where a lot of really big things happened. This is not filler. It's a really nice way to give some to like move the story forward in this cool format. And there's also an interview with my precious wife, Lucy, who is no longer with us. And the idea is that they had this interview, but it had been suppressed for legal reasons, and now they can release it. And so then the Kevin Wada art is done like these fashion photo shoots, and they're so amazing. Wow. And now I'm scared that like Vogue is going to fire Grace Coddington and steal Kevin Wada away from us. He's ours. We had him first.
Yeah, I know. I feel like several artists are like that. Like, we're lucky to have them in comics,
yes,
but they could easily just be swept away into another medium.
Oh my God, remember when you were basically like, hey, Jamie McKelvey, why don't you go be a big time music video director?
I feel fine. Like I saw you like clutch your heart when we did that interview. And you almost like stop breathing.
Anyway, and so there's also these really cool like in-universe ads that Jamie McKelvey and Matt Wilson did. Mm-hmm. And it's a really cool idea. I hope they do it again.
So when is Jamie leaving comics to go to be a fancy music video director? Did you find out yet?
Unacceptable, Matthew.
All right. One more book from me, Animosity, from our dear friends at Aftershock Comics. Spoilers, animals have become sentient, and they can speak like normal people.
And they're
not happy.
They're a little put out with their
That's
situation.
That's an understatement. So they're a little PO'd about how they've been treated. This is all animals. It's not just dogs and cats. And the story, like, essentially all hell breaks loose on Earth. The animals are now equal in their view to humans, so they want equal, you know,
they want reparations.
They do. They want hardcore reparations right now. So we follow a bloodhound who is kind of almost like, at the first onset of the first issue, he's the only like good guy. Like every other animal in the area is like just really pissed off and they're like killing people essentially. But the bloodhound, who is the dog of this family, I think there's like a 10-year-old girl in the family. So he's looking after her. He's trying to protect the family from the viciousness that's surrounding them around the entire country, the whole planet, really. And the second issue, which is I just read, 3 just came out. The second issue kind of had some time has passed. So it's like an apocalyptic setting where they're kind of wandering the country trying to stay alive. Meanwhile, there's like a meeting in Times Square between this U.S. senator and this alleged leader of the animal resistance, and they want... they like have demands,
yeah,
and they want the human population to like stop procreating, pretty much. Like there's too much of you.
Well, because the senator was telling them like that they should stop procreating, and the animals are like, why should that be on us?
Yeah. What was the animal that came to meet them in Times Square? Was it a moose?
It was a moose.
And
a squirrel.
They had two squirrels, and they had sniper rifles in his antlers, and they had strings attached to the sniper rifle, like they could pull and shoot the senator. So it's really crazy. And that issue had a really big cliffhanger ending. I'm not sure if you realize this, Lou. I'm a father, but I'm also a dog owner.
Oh my God.
So this book has the double whammy on my heart. And the father of the little girl, he doesn't see eye to eye with the dog. Like there's still some like super apprehension there that he could turn at any second, but the dog loves the child and the mom. And something happens at the end of issue 2, which is just, oh my word.
It was brutal.
My word.
It was brutal.
Man alive.
Yeah.
You just got to read it. It's very good.
It is good.
Is that Marguerite?
Marguerite Bennett.
She's good.
She really is. You know, I feel like I associate her with this Scott Snyder school of writing horror.
Literally.
But where they're just they seem like such nice, well-adjusted people when you meet them. And they just come up with this twisted stuff that's really heart-wrenching.
What is the, she's writing a Marvel book soon, right? Like a big Marvel relaunch. She's not doing Miss America Chavez, is she?
America Chavez.
But there's like another number one that came out or is coming out that she's writing. Maybe we'll get the interns on it. I feel like we should know this, but we don't.
Where did you hear this rumor? I need
the internet.
More
information. Maybe it was on Twitter. Maybe that was the second nice thing that I read on Twitter. What else? Anything else you want to talk about before we get to our letters?
I did read Bitch Planet number 9. I know that book has kind of a sporadic publication schedule, but it's really so worth it because I think that they make sure that everything is done really well. It's a really powerful book. I've never noticed this before, or I guess maybe I've never put it together, but I love how I'm guessing that Valentine Delandro does the design of the panel layouts. And there's really neat places where he will have like in a big panel where there's things going on, he'll put smaller boxes or like lines inside the panel to separate people out, and it's almost like they're being imprisoned by like a separate panel within a panel.
Oh, yeah.
Which is it's an interesting motif. I'd like to go back and like make a note of it and see if there's anything to that metaphor that when it happens. Mm-hmm. And the colors by Kelly Fitzpatrick in this one, they're like, there's like prison rioting happening and she's using this like really orange palette and it feels very like it makes you anxious and it's very frenetic. And so the design and the aesthetic of this book, I think was really well done. And the back matter essay was written by a professor I TA'd for in grad school, which was really exciting.
You're just so connected these days, Lou. You know, everybody. You're making things happen for WICDIV behind the scenes 2 years ago, planting seeds. What are you planting seeds for right now that we'll find out
Wouldn't
about in 2 years?
Would you like to know?
Oh, boy. All right. So shall we get to the letters this week?
We shall.
All right. Letters at comixology.com. First one comes in from subject line number one. Not enough time has passed yet to get over the bomb that was dropped last week, but we all know Lou will carry the torch a la Romita when Ditko left Spider-Man. I assume your show numbering has continued, but if this was a Marvel book, it would presumably have restarted as a number one. I get why this is done, but in your expert opinions, is the current trend to restart a series too frequent these days, or does the numbering even matter? No matter what, you'll always be number one, Mikey P.
Aww.
There you have it. Of course, he's referencing Kara,
yeah,
who rode off into the vacation sunset last week. Amazing episode.
I know, and she's going to become this like international woman of mystery.
She's going to be bigger than all of us combined.
That's true.
You know, she planted that seed 2 years ago. Just like she learned it from you. The interesting thing about the numbering is Marvel, I think, has taken a different route where some of the popular ones now, they're like doing a big number one in the top corner if it's the first part in a new story, but they're retaining the numbering. I like that.
Yeah, I do too, because I felt like for a while there, it was like five issues and then you get a new number one, and that was kind of annoying. But I do think that, you know, when you get up into the like tens or hundreds of a book, it's a real barrier of entry for people who might want to join in. And so, yeah, this seems like a good compromise. The big one.
Yeah,
for
I like
the
it. I hope they keep that up.
Yeah.
Keep that up. They did that for a little while before with like, remember the 0.1 issues?
Oh,
the
1. Yeah. 1? Yeah, yeah.
I wonder why they never did those again. Let's see. Final letter. Subject line, you do you, Lou. Hey, Comixology, sad to see Kazam leave for her long walkabout, but glad to hear the rising star that is Lou. I've been a bit busy and had to binge listen to many episodes, but I think she has been doing a great job with very interesting comments and brings a whole new flavor to the show. Matt stays stellar, always, but on to my question. This weekend, I picked up some comics in store that were Halloween-themed. Do you guys have any favorite holiday-themed comics or show episodes that you have read or watched? I'm partial to animated series Batman episode where Robin tries to get Batman in the Christmas spirit. You both stay golden. That comes from Mr. Golden. Stay golden, literally the best email sign off of all time.
It's amazing. What a lovely letter too.
You do you, Lou. So do you have any favorite holiday or Halloween themed things?
Oh my God, I totally do. My very favorite issue of my favorite Marvel book, Journey into Mystery, is the Christmas episode, the Christmas issue. I can't remember what number it is now. Mitch and Betty Breitweiser do the art, and it's where Loki's like mischief has resulted in Hela's hellhound having a litter of puppies, and she's like, I literally cannot deal with this, so she like delivers a box of hell puppies to Asgard, and the All Mother won't let Loki keep them, so he and Leah like have to find homes for all of them. And it's really cute, and that's how he ends up with Thori Death Ripper, best of all dogs.
There you have it. I never read that one. Spoilers.
I'll bring it to you. It's really good. And it has Volstagg as Santa Claus.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
The I'm trying to think of other holiday themed episodes. It just made me think of some of my favorite Batman episodes, where I think Almost Got Him was one of my favorite Batman episodes. Do you ever see that one where it's all the rogues gallery telling stories about how they almost got Batman, and it's revealed like Killer Croc is sitting there, Penguin, Poison Ivy, and they're on like playing poker, and they're always telling these stories about how they almost got him, and at the end of the episode it's revealed that Batman is in Killer Croc disguise and he's been listening the whole time.
Oh my god.
There's also a great Christmas one where I think Joker takes over a television station and is playing like a game show with like, I think Commissioner Gordon is kidnapped, so Batman and Robin have to get there before like clock strikes midnight or whatever. Pretty much every Batman episode is amazing.
I was just gonna say, I feel like I associate Michael Keaton Batman with Christmas.
Yeah, Batman Returns was in Christmas.
Yeah,
in Christmas. I remember he blew up a clown with like a bomb in that movie and no one batted an eyelash.
Well, I mean, clowns are a serious threat.
I know, now they are.
Yeah.
You could get arrested if you were in a clown costume outside right now.
Well, I mean, clowns are up to no good.
I just started rewatching the It television show.
Oh my God,
movie.
Why?
It's scary.
Yeah,
it's very frightening.
It is.
I mean, the first storyline in that movie is the little kid. The brother like is getting annoyed by his younger brother and tells him to go play with this the ship that's made out of paper, like in the street.
Yeah.
So he like puts it in like the curb, so it's like going down in this little like riverbed of water
in the gutter. Yeah.
And like I'm thinking to myself, like, this is what society was like back then, but like now, my God, can you imagine this?
You'd be arrested for child abuse.
They would all be in prison right now. So I felt so bad. This kid's so adorable, and then he gets to the gutter, and the thing goes in the gutter, and then it. What's the clown's name? I can't remember what it is, but the clown is like underneath the sewer drain, and he's like, you know, I have your toy right here. Why don't you come play with me down here? And then he pulls the kid, and the kid's dead. Spoiler. But it's just so I can't deal with those stories anymore.
No,
I couldn't deal with Stranger Things for a while because that kid went missing.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I couldn't handle it.
No,
makes
I know.
Me uncomfortable.
My mom actually called me and she was mad at my brother because he told her that she should check out Stranger Things, but it like upset her that the kid went missing, yeah. And so she called to yell at me because
she should. That's good. I would have called to yell at you as well. I can't do with those shows. Once I get older and have a kid, uncomfortable.
I mean, I feel that way about animals. I have to check, does the dog die before I watch a movie now?
The animosity. So how are you dealing with animosity?
It's hard because...
There was a cat selling drugs an issue too.
I mean, cats would though, right?
Yeah, they would. What a show.
What a show. Are you gonna sing the theme song to take us out?
I think you should sing it one more time. No. And then maybe I should cut it out and share it as a sound clip for people to listen to.
It's Slim and Lou, the podcast crew, recommending comics just for you. I like Beer Agent.